This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. What's the future of the black family economy? A recent Pew Center study said black family finances have improved over the last three decades, but they still have a lot less income and wealth than white families. Some black households are stacking major chips. They're building a strong financial portfolio that will help them thrive in a shaky economy. Figuring out how to keep the lights on, the babysitter paid, and gas in the car is causing families no shortage of financial and emotional stress. To help us talk through these issues, we've got Boyce Watkins. He's an economist at Syracuse University, and he's also a father dealing with child support. We also have Andre and Shafonda Hayward. 5 years into their marriage, they have two kids, two jobs, and the bills keep coming. Thank you guys for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Andre and Shafonda, without going too far into your incomes, would you say that together you make enough money, more than enough money, not enough money to make ends meet? Shafonda?
It's kind of hard because we make enough money, but like they say, the more money you make, the more money you spend. So we make enough money, but still, what is enough money? There's never enough money.
It depends on what you enough for what. We make enough to pay the bills, but we don't have a, you know, it like I said, it depends on which, enough for what.
Now, Andre, I understand that you've got two girls, 5 and 6 years old, and you are spending a lot of money on gasoline. Gas is going up. Tell us what you do and how much you're spending on gas.
Okay. I'm in construction, job title carpenter, and I work approximately 50 miles from where we live. So I'm filling up every two days. And that monthly, that gets pretty expensive. That's almost like a car note. And that's just on gas.
So hundreds of dollars each month on gas.
Correct.
And Shafonda, what about you? What's the job situation on your end?
I work probably maybe 20 miles from our house, and I work in the city of Beverly Hills. And coming from L.A. to Beverly Hills, it's really not that far, but with the traffic and everything, dropping the kids off at school, and the type of car I have an SUV, and the way gas is, it's crazy. Like, maybe I can fill up once a week, but that one time a week is $70 almost.
Where does the emotion come in? You're both working, you've got young kids. You're not different from so many millions of families in that it's got to stress you out. I guess Shafonda first, and then Andre, how does it affect your ability to just feel relaxed on the day-to-day?
What's
it
that?
It affects it a lot.
What's that? You say relaxed. What's that?
Yeah, what's that?
Exactly. With two kids and taking care of a household, it's really hard. It's really not relaxing because sometimes you wonder, you never know what's going to happen the next day. And it's really hard. There's no relaxation whatsoever because the kids are always going to need something, or something always go wrong in the house or with cars, and we have to keep our cars, we have to maintain them really good because, like my husband, he works so far out, and with me, we need a reliable car because I have the kids in my car and I have to, you know, get back and forth to work and taking them to school. So, no, there's no relaxation whatsoever. It can cause emotional problems a lot.
Let me give you a quick rundown on average day for me.
Mm-hmm.
I start my day at between 4 and 4:30 every day because I got to get myself time to get to work. So that's an hour. Work on the once I get off work, I immediately go pick the kids up from school. Or as soon as I get home, got to help them with their homework, get them situated. Now we're into the early evening. Sometimes I got to get dinner cooked because, like she said, she's in a lot of traffic, and she gets off work right in rush hour with everybody else. So sometimes I got to get dinner started or whatever, help the kids with the homework, get the dinner started, get them ready for the next day. So now we into the early night. It's 7, 8 o'clock, and like I said, I start my day so early in the morning. I need to be in the bed by 9, 10 o'clock. So it's like I'm going 24 hours a day, like nonstop, and it's an everyday thing.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Well, but let me bring Boyce in here now.
Yeah.
You are an economist at Syracuse. Give us a sense of the big picture, because I understand that you say that while there's some progress in incomes, you call it awkward progress. What do you mean, and how does that relate to the stories that you've been hearing from Andre and Shafonda?
Well, I think this story is quite typical. I mean, not only have I studied this, but I have lived this. I remember my mother's car getting repossessed when I was a little kid, and I called the police because I thought somebody stole it. And I was shocked when she grabbed the phone and hung it up. You know, I can say that in the big picture, basically, African-Americans, what's really going on is that our wealth levels are less than one-fourth on average compared to whites. Home ownership, less than half of us own our own homes. As far as the 1.2 million black-owned businesses in America, which is a very small number, 1.1 million of those businesses have no employees. So the fact is that overall, in the big picture, the legacy, the 400-year legacy of economic exclusion of the black community, we built the country, but we were not compensated for that. The inability of our parents and grandparents to pass that wealth down to us does sort of lead us to be born into a struggle that we have to fight through. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't possess good values and can't make good decisions, which these people obviously are. They're doing the best they can with what they have. But the fact is that they're not alone in this struggle.
Give us a little bit more background on you, because you have a child, you've obviously got a good job, but how does, give us a sense of how, what you're struggling with, I guess, you know, even if it may not be tight.
Well, in so many ways, I was blessed enough to have really, to some extent, been a walking statistic. Almost everything that happens to a black male, I experienced it just enough to barely escape those problems. You know, my best friend was shot in the head. I had a child when I was 18 years old. We grew up in poverty. My mother was 16 years old when she got pregnant with me. We lived in the projects together. The list kind of goes on and on. I really ended up here by accident, which makes me so committed to the work that I do. But the reality is that I can admit I'm very open about my experience. I've probably paid more enough child support to fund the Pentagon for a year. And I know that what happens is that, you know, with me being economically successful, that child support is not just child support. It becomes mama and daddy support, uncle support, cousin support. You know, my daughter's siblings are being supported by that money because their father is incarcerated, which was where he's been for the past 12 or 13 years. And I'm not saying this to talk about him per se, because that is another bigger picture in itself. In the large numbers of African American males that are being incarcerated, many times some guys do commit crimes and do things that are illegal, but the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Almost every statistic shows that. So all these issues with black men being pulled away, the lack of wealth being passed from one generation to the next, et cetera, play a huge role in the structure and in the awkward progress of the black family. Because the thing is that we can't just paint a doom and gloom scenario. Let's be clear, there are more African Americans that have advanced degrees now than there ever were before. In 2004, we had 624,000. Now we have 1.1 million. More African Americans are owning their own homes, and our wealth and income is increasing. But the fact is that it took 400 years to build this problem. We can't fix it in 10 or 20.
Well, Boyce, I just want to reintroduce for folks who are just tuning in. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We were just hearing from Boyce Watkins. He's an economist at Syracuse University, also a father dealing with child support. And we also have on the line Andre and Shafonda Hayward, 5 years into their marriage. They have two kids and two jobs and plenty of bills. But you guys also have a lot of determination. What keeps you going when you might find yourself a little stretched?
Our kids.
Yeah.
I mean, wanting them, I mean, I want my kids to never have to want for anything. You know, I mean, I'm just not going to give them anything just because they ask for it. They're going to have to deserve it. But it's just, I want them to have a better life than we did.
I agree. I just, they didn't ask, they wouldn't, you know, they didn't ask to be here. We decided to have them, and we brought them into this situation. And like she said, I was just listening to Boyce, right?
I agree
with everything he said. It's like if it's hard, it's so hard to get ahead today. You need, it's almost like you need somebody to, like a lot of friends I have, they live in their parents' house or their grandparents' house. They can't go out and buy a house. And it's like I think all the time I need to get a house today. So if something happens to me in the future, my kids will have somewhere to stay, or my grandkids. And it's like, it's just hard out here, to, like he said, to fix the problem in 10 or 20 years. And I like to think I'm making all the right decisions, but it just seems like I can't get over that hump.
Now, but, Andre and Shafonda, you've been together, from what I understand, for 10 years. You're still in, both still in your 20s. And how do you, what's your dream, Shafonda, for how things might play out over the next 30, 40 years? Do you see yourself being able to retire at an age where you can still enjoy life? Do you see yourself being able to be a little more comfortable?
Yes, I really do. It's funny because I was talking to Andre not too long ago about it, because he kind of brought up the subject of having another baby. And I explained to him, I'm like, are you sure about this? I'm like, we're finally at this, like, peak where we're getting to enjoy our life. You know, it's like we really don't have to worry about, you know, we really don't have to, like, start living from paycheck anymore. We're, like, comfortable with our living status and our, you know, we're not living above our means. And I just, like, really wanted to talk to him to make sure, like, you know, are you sure about this? Because we're comfortable where we are now, you know, we're finally able to relax and really don't have to worry about, you know, what's going to happen next. And I just want my kids to be able, I want to be able to, like, start saving money for my kids so when it's time for them to go to college, they don't have to keep taking out these big loans and have to worry about paying those back. You know, if they, grade-wise, yes, it'll be great if they can get a scholarship, but if not, I want to be able to help them go through college and not have to worry about paying loans back.
Andre, do you have a master plan for how you're going to achieve this, or do you just try to make good decisions on the week to week?
In all honesty, I just try to make good decisions week to week. And I was just listening to find out what she just said. What she said is true, but I was sitting there listening. I'm thinking, what she mean by comfortable is I'm not necessarily living paycheck to paycheck, but I'm a paycheck for being broke, you know what I'm saying? If something really happens, we don't really have that much money saved up, but we do, we have a lot money than we had a few years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, boys, is that common? Is it common for people to be what some folks call a paycheck away from disaster?
Yeah, that's not just a black problem. That's really an American problem. But as we, most of us know, whatever happens to the rest of America comes down about 10 times harder on the black community. One of the things I can say to this couple to really help them work through the situation is, number one, I'm very proud of both of you. You know, when I listen to the brother talk, what I really respect most about this man is that he is trying, he's committed, and he's moving forward. And the fact of the matter is that his most valuable assets in the world are not financial. It's the fact that he has a family that loves him and supports him, and he has to remember that the richest people in the world sometimes don't have any money at all, and sometimes the poorest people in the world can have billions. The other thing to remember is that anybody can save. When I did research this summer with the Center for European Economic Research, one of my German colleagues came to me and said, "What is wrong with Americans and the way they manage their money?" He said, "Germans make less than Americans do, we pay more in taxes than Americans do, but we save five times more money than Americans do." So people who tell me they can't save, they're probably wrong. The third thing I would say is that my grandmother, who never went to college, never made more than $20,000 a year, but was always financially independent and hasn't been married since she was 20 years old, she told me very clearly, this was before I got my PhD, she said, "If you are a saver, you will always have money. If you are a spender, you will always be broke. Because when spenders get more money, they spend more. When savers get more money, they save more." So most of money management and getting ahead financially is psychological. All the technical magic and mumbo jumbo is really just sort of icing on the cake.
Well, what do you say? I mean, Andre and Shafonda are not spending more than their means, but what advice, and I know that you're an economist, not a personal finance person, but what advice would you have for just putting a little bit away for the future?
Well, number one, I would recommend definitely keeping a budget, because it's hard to know where you're going if you don't know where you are and where you've been. And a lot of people don't even keep a budget. And keeping a budget can go a long way in terms of helping you manage your money. The second thing I would remind anybody is to think ownership. You know, I really believe this is part of a legacy of our slave mentality. I talk to even a lot of doctors and lawyers who go to school so they can get a good job working for somebody else. And I say that, you know, I believe in not just getting a good job. I believe in creating a job. If you get by a man a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. Well, the person who's really getting over is the person who owns the land land that the pond is on, who's renting it out to people teaching each other how to fish. So own something, whether it's your home, your business, or whatever the case may be. That is how wealth is built in America, and that's really the mentality that we need to have as African Americans.
Andre and Shafonda, when you hear this, does this sound like something that is in your reach or something that's just a dream?
It seems feasible. It seems like that could be reached because, like, what's the word I'm going to use? I agree with him. I agree with him 100%. Like Fonda had said a moment ago, we just in recent months just kind of start making that transition where we could start saving a few extra dollars, cut back on some of the not really blowing money or really just managing our money better. I'll say that, and I'm want to make that step like. And owning our home, I'll use that for example. That's my first step, buying the house that I'm in now and taking it from there. I'm really just, after years of work, I've been working since I was a teenager. I mean, 13, 14. And it seems like it's just finally starting to pay off, and I'm almost 30. I'm talking 15 years hard work, and it's just now starting to pay off.
Well, you know what? We're going to have to end this here, but we would like to talk to all of you again. You have some valuable insights. Andre, Shafonda, Boyce, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Andre and Shafonda Hayward. They are a working-class Los Angeles couple who are making it work and working on making it better. Boyce Watkins is a finance professor at Syracuse University. He runs the website yourblackworld.com, and he's author of the book, What If George Bush Were a Black Man?